Okay, if you would, turn in your Bibles to John chapter 1. It's where we're going to be this morning. I will again read chapter 20, verse 30 and 31, because that is the purpose of the book and the theme of the book. It says in verse 30, "Many other signs therefore Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not recorded or written in this book. But these have been written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in His name." So the purpose that John has written the Gospel of John is not necessarily just to record the events of his life like we have in the other Gospels, but to record the events of his life in the way that would cause you to understand and believe that he is the Son of God. And so the Gospel of John is focusing on the deity of Christ and the ministry of Christ as the Son of God. And so that's what the Gospel is about. And so the first chapter, the first 18 verses of the first chapter primarily, it's a prologue, or it deals with the underlying truths of this person that we call Jesus. So he's saying this person that you see, and we're kind of going to study as if we were there when he was on earth. So we're looking at this man Jesus, and John is describing first he's given us the truth concerning this man Jesus, and then we're looking at his actions, and then we're hearing his words to give evidence to the fact of who he is and what he's doing. So we're trying to bring that to kind of the reality of what it would have been like for us to be there and see him in the flesh, and then give the understanding of his actions and his teaching that would cause us to believe that he is the Son of God. So we've begun in John chapter 1, and we're in the first three verses. So let's read the first three verses again, and we'll review just a little bit, because I want to make sure that we understand, as we review the aspect of the creation, that we also understand that the purpose of the book is not to give understanding and attention to the creation as much as it is to give understanding and attention to the Creator. Okay? So we'll talk about the creation because it's in here, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we talked about last week to give clarity of that, hopefully. But that's not the focus of the book, so we want to get back to the focus of the person of the book, which is Jesus, and not necessarily the aspect of his being Creator. But the role of him being Creator is very important as we understand and believe that he is God. So verses 1 through 3, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being by him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being." And we talked about the beginning, the word beginning, and the meaning of that word is first, the first act, or the first foundation, the first call. I mean, it's the very first of that. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 14, in the description that John gives to the church at Laodicea about who this Jesus is, he calls him the beginning. It's the same word. Jesus is the beginning. That doesn't mean that Jesus had a beginning. It means that Jesus is the first. He is the originator. He is before anything else. That's what the word would mean if you're tying it to him in name as the beginning. He is the originator, or the first before anything else was. So he is God. And prior to the beginning, there's nothing but God. Okay? In eternity, God is. And we talked about that. We drew a circle and we said eternity is not a timeline. It's a realm or a sphere. Doesn't mean that because you drew a circle that it has boundaries. It's limitless. But it's talking about an eternal presence of God that he always is. He is present all the time. He is not he's not bound by time frameworks like we are as finite created beings. So, in the beginning, we have that initial understanding that the beginning is the first act, the foundational act of God. Okay, in the beginning was the Word. The Word is Logos. Again, that's the Greek word Logos, and it means the intelligence of God. And in the second person of the Trinity, who is called the Word, we have the intelligence of God expressed in the person. So the intelligence of God is expressed in that person, the Word, the Son of God, Jesus Christ. It's the second person of the Trinity. We know the Trinity is a Godhead of consisting of three persons, equally in essence, equally in nature. All three persons of God are individually God and collectively united. They're all unified together in purpose and in essence and in everything in nature. So individually, they're all God, but collectively, they're united as God. So you have individual persons in the Godhead. Collectively, as the Godhead, they work in complete harmony with each other. And so the essence of God is three in one, a Trinity, and then the second person of the Trinity is what is called here the Logos, the expression of God or the intelligence of God that is expressed. And it's expressed in creation, and it's expressed as we get into verse 14 of chapter 1, the Word was made flesh. So the Logos, the intelligence of God, is expressed in the person, the human, Jesus Christ. So God became human, and God, in His human form, expressed the intelligence of God completely. In other words, He is the image of God completely. He represents God in every aspect of His nature, His intelligence, His being. Okay, so that's what we have is the Word. The Word is the intelligence of God, and it is the intelligence of God expressed in these ways. Now, in verse 3, we talked last week about the creation. It says, in Him, it says, all things came into being by Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. Okay, before the beginning, or prior to the beginning, not before, because that's time. Prior to the beginning, before anything was, there was God. And the beginning is the beginning of creation. The beginning of creation. So before anything was made, God was, or God is, and all things that have been made are made by the Word. The Word is the originator of everything that has been made. All right. So when we talk about creation, and we talked about it a little bit last week, and I want to clarify or try to give you complete understanding of what I'm saying about Genesis 1:1 and 1:1-3. So if you would turn to in your Bibles to Genesis, as we'll try to clarify this Genesis account and what I was saying last week about the Genesis account so that we have complete understanding. Okay, verse 1 in Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, some people hold that this verse is an overview of the six-day creation. You understand what I'm saying? Some people hold that verse 1 is an overview of the entirety of the six-day creation. That's impossible. Okay? That can't be. It cannot be an overview. Either it is the beginning of day one, or it has got another meaning. The reason it can't be an overview is because verse 2 says, the earth was. That means the earth is there. Okay? So it has been created. Now, either it was created in verse 1, and that's day 1, or it's created prior to day 1. The earth is there in verse 2. Okay? Now, the earth is in a condition in verse 2 of formlessness and darkness and covered water. That's the condition of the earth in verse 2. Everybody agree with that? The earth is there, so it's been created. So it had to be created in verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So the heavens are what? When we talk about the heavens there in verse 1, what's he talking about? Everything outside of the earth that's created. So it's the space that includes what will become the atmospheric heavens, which are created in day 2. It will also include the universal heavens, where all of the stars are, which is created in day 4. But it also includes the heaven of heavens, God's heaven, which is outside of the universe, or outside of the stars, So there is the heaven of heavens, God's heaven. There will be the universal heavens, the stars, created in verse 4, in day 4. And then there's the atmospheric heavens, where we have oxygen and the birds fly in, which is created in day 2. So when he says heavens, he's talking about everything that is outside of the earth. Now, before the creation, prior to the beginning, there was no space. It was nothingness. It was God and nothing else, because everything else had to be created. So before or prior to the beginning, there's God only. And then God created space and earth. Okay? Now, earth, like I said, either Genesis 1:1 is the beginning of day 1, or it is prior to day 1. Okay? So the earth, in verse 2, it says, the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. So here you have the earth in verse 2 it's there. Okay? The earth is there, but it is in a state of chaos. The word there is the Hebrew word tohu. It's a Hebrew word tohu, and that means formlessness. It means darkness. It means unusableness, wasteness, worthlessness. In other words, the earth in this condition is of no value. Now the question is, in day 1, did God create the earth in this condition of wasteness, worthlessness, unusableness, and then out of that continue to do a work of creation? Or did the earth become in this condition? Now we know in verse 2 it's in this condition. It's in a condition that is a total wasteland, unusable place, covered with water, and completely enclosed in darkness. That's the condition of the earth in verse 2. Now the question was it created in that condition to be further formed, or did it become in that condition by the judgment of God? There's only two possibilities. Okay? It had to have been created in verse 1. The earth was created in verse 1. And either it was created in a state that it's in verse 2, or it became in that state because of the judgment of God. Now, in either case, the 6 days that follow, or the 6 days that are continuing, either one, there is no issue with the literalness of the 6 days and everything that God created in the 6 days that is mentioned in the first three chapters. Do you understand what I'm saying? Whether you hold that God judged the original earth and made it into a place of wasteland, or if he started out by creating the earth in this condition and then followed through with finishing the creation, in either way, either if day 1 begins in verse 1, or if day 1 begins in verse 3 when it says, after the earth is in this condition, he says, then God said, let there be light. So if day 1, if what God did on day 1 is just the creation or the bringing light into a world of darkness, or if God created the heavens and the earth and then brought life in the same day, that's the question. Either day 1 begins in verse 1 or day 1 begins in verse 3 and there was something prior to day 1. Does that make sense what I'm saying though? The earth had to be created in verse 1. So it cannot be an overview. It cannot be a statement of overview then dealing with the 6 days, because the earth had to be created. And so if you start in verse 2, the earth is there. So it has to have already been created. So it had to have been created in verse 1. So in verse 1, it cannot be an overview of the 6 day creation. It has to be either the first day or it has to be something prior to the first day.
One more time, how do we know the condition before How do you know what the condition was like before the day one?
Well, what I'm saying is, in verse 2, read it again. This is the condition of the earth in verse 2. Of Genesis. Chapter 1, verse 2. The earth was. That means it is there. It is already created, and this is the condition of the earth. It is covered with water, it is in total darkness, and it is useless, wasteland, chaotic. Okay? So that's the condition. Now the question is, did God make it in that condition in the beginning of the creative work, or did God judge the created work that was already created and it became like this? That's the question. And whether you take either one of those positions, it does not change the literal nature of the 6 days in which we understand what God did in every day. So if day one begins in verse 3, and God created light, and then He created the atmospheric heavens, and then He created the land mass, and then He created the stars, and then He created the birds and the fish, and then He created man and the animals, everything that He did in the 6 days is a literal creative work of God. So whether you start with day one, in verse 1, and the heavens and earth created in a chaotic state full of darkness, and then God brings light into that, or if God judged it and He began in verse 3, it still does not change the literal nature of the 6 days of creation. That's what I'm trying to make sure you understand. I am not putting something prior to day 1 to allow for evolution, to allow for fossil records, because there's no fossils. You can't have fossils without plants and animals. Okay? So if anything was there, it was just the bare earth that had been created prior. So we're not trying to make allowance for billions of years of fossil records. No, we're not doing that. We're saying either the earth was created in a darkened, useless state, or it became in a darkened, useless state. Now, why would we say it became that way? Well, let's look in a couple of verses. And I would hold to the second reality, not that it was created in a dark state, that it became, for two reasons. First, the two words that we're looking at mostly is the word tohu, which means chaotic, and in the Hebrew definition of that word, it always carries a negative connotation. It's not a good thing to be in a chaotic situation. So it carries with it a negative connotation. Do you have a question?
I'm trying to clarify something in my own mind. So when you're saying that the question that we're looking at is, was it created darkness and useless, or did it become that? You used the word also chaotic, that word means chaotic. Since God is a God of order, which we have a very clear understanding of that through Scripture, then it does not seem that God would create it in that state.
All right, you got two words. The first one is formlessness, that is tohu, which means wasteland, uselessness, chaotic. Okay, so you're right. It does not seem to fit God's nature of everything being in order. The other word is the same thing. The other word is covered or full of darkness. Darkness all the way through the Bible is used of the opposite of light. The opposite of good is evil. In every case, darkness is always used of something that comes out of a judgment of God, a condemnation of God, an evilness. It is in contrast to God. In fact, if you want to go to the verse that is very clear, in 1 John 1:5, it says, "And this is the message that we have heard from Him and announced to you, that God is light, and in Him there is no darkness at all." So if you're having God creating the heavens and the earth, and He starts out by having it in darkness, that doesn't fit with who God is from that standpoint. Why would He create something in darkness and then bring light into it? Why would He just not start out with light? Which He does in Revelation 21, 22. When you see the eternal creation of the new heavens and new earth, the earth, there's no 6 days, there's no process. John just says, "And I saw a new heaven, new earth." God spoke it into being in perfection. There's no sun, there's no moon, there's no stars, there's no nighttime, there's no darkness, there's no oceans. So here you have an earth that is perfect for eternity going forward in our estimation of forward. But it's created perfect. Why wouldn't the first earth be the same?
What is he starting? The time of days for man?
Yes, but we'll get that in just a second. We'll get that in a second.
We're going to get to this, but the obvious question that comes up is man wasn't around to mess things up and bring about judgment. So
who was? Who was? When did God create the angels?
No, I said man.
I know.
Yeah.
But man's not the only source of darkness.
Okay, I heard.
He's also not the only created being.
Not the only created being. So the other question in looking at this is if heavens and earth were created on day one and it's part of the process of the 6 days, where do you find in the 6 days that God created the angels? And in Job chapter 38, it makes clear that the angels are there when he is laying the foundations of the earth in the 6 days. God says to Job, where were you when I laid the foundations? Where were you when I placed the boundaries on the oceans and the land where the oceans could go this far and no further? Where were you when the sons of God shouted for joy? They were witnessing the 6 days, which means they were there prior to the 6 days, which means something was created prior to day one. That would have been angels. Okay, so one other verse in Isaiah chapter 45. When it's talking about God being the creator, in verse 18 of Isaiah 14, it says, "For thus says the Lord who created the heavens, he is the God who formed the earth and made it. He established it and did not create it a waste place." That same word is tohu. So he said, God did not create it as tohu. In other words, so then it must have become tohu. And again, when God is talking about the formation of the earth, it is not the word create, it's the word stand out of. In other words, when, look in 2 Peter. In 2 Peter, Peter is talking about the coming judgment of God that's been promised, and the mockers and the scoffers are laughing and mocking at the fact of the coming judgment, just like in the days of Noah, the people of Noah's day were mocking and laughing at Noah for building an ark in the middle of dry land. It had never rained before, and Noah is saying it's going to rain, it's going to flood the whole earth, and they're mocking and they're scoffing. In today's society, people are mocking and scoffing that God is going to judge the world again. And so in chapter 3 of 2 Peter, he's talking about that, and it says, verse 5, it says, "When they maintain this, that God's not going to come in judgment, it escapes their notice that by the word of God, the heavens existed long ago and the earth was formed out of water." Now, the word formed there does not mean it was created. It means the earth stood out of the water. In other words, it became evident or visible out of the water. It's not a word that means create. It means it was changed. It was formed into a usable earth for man. We'll get back to this, what Kathy was asking about. So here's the summary of what I'm saying here. Is I'm saying that in the beginning, God created an earth that was like what he's going to create in the end. And it'd be an earth that is void of darkness and void of oceans. Okay. Now, in Ezekiel chapter 23, I think it is demonstrating that earth when it's talking about the anointed cherub. In Ezekiel chapter 28, there's a prophecy against the leader of the kingdom of Tyre, who is arrogant and like Satan in his pride, and he's built up. And then God speaks a word about the king that is behind the king, which is the king of this world, the god of this world, Satan. And he begins by talking about prior to him becoming Satan, he was the anointed cherub. And so he says, "You had the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden." This is in verse 12 of Ezekiel 28. "Ever precious stone was your covering." He goes down in verse, the end of that verse. The gold, the workmanship was of your settings and sockets was in you on the day that you were created. They were prepared. You were the anointed cherub who covers, and I placed you. You were on the holy mountain of God. Now, where is the holy mountain of God? The mountain of God, Mount Zion, on earth is always Jerusalem. So prior to the 6 days of creation of an earth for man, there was an earth created in perfection, and God put his throne on that earth, on the mountain of God, that I believe was in the same place on that earth as Jerusalem is and always will be. So God's throne was placed on that mountain of God. That's supposed to be a throne. God's throne was placed on that mountain of God, and God created the angels. Now, why would you need a throne if you don't have subjects to rule over? Right? So there's no point in having a mountain of God or a throne of God without something to rule over. So God created the angels. And the anointed cherub was the anointed cherub means that he was the angel that was over the mountain of God or over the world that God had created. So I believe that of all the angels, the anointed cherub that became Satan had dominion over this created earth that was created perfect, in which God put his throne on that earth.
In your opinion, or according to this concept, was God planning on creating man after he created angels and they did not fall?
When God purposed at the beginning, prior to any creation, God purposed. And God's purpose was to get to an eternity with God only, to an eternity with elect angels and redeemed humanity.
Okay. That's the answer.
So God had purposed.
He was planning on, or the plan.
The plan was.
Hard because he knew that it wasn't going to work. But his plan was create the angels and men on that original creation.
Exactly.
The angels fell first.
And there had to be sin introduced so that Adam and Eve had the choice of sin.
In the second creation.
In the second. But for man to fall, there had to be sin already present.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Okay, so here you have an earth that is perfect. The Eden, the garden of God. This is not a plant garden because plants hadn't been made yet. This is a mineral garden. This is a place that God had placed. Where's Eden? Eden is a location. In the account of Adam and Eve, it says God planted a garden in Eden. Just like if God had planted a garden in Jerusalem. Eden is a location. Okay? So here it says the anointed cherub was in the garden of God in Eden prior to God planting a garden for Adam and Eve in Eden. So this is on the original earth that didn't have darkness and didn't have covered water. It was perfect in the way that God made it, and the angels were worshiping God around the throne, and the anointed cherub had dominion over the entire earth that God had created. That gives you a place for the creation of angels, and it makes the earth created in the image of God in the sense that God is not darkness, He is light, and God is not using water, because water was always used as a form of judgment. That's why there's no water oceans in the eternal earth. So what happened is that it says, you were the anointed cherub who covers. I placed you on the holy mountain of God. You walked in the midst of the stones of fire. The stones of fire are gemstones, are mineral brilliance of the diamonds, rubies, all those things. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. By the abundance of your trade, you were eternally filled with violence and you sinned. And therefore, I have cast you as profane from the mountain of God. So, if the anointed cherub had dominion over this original earth, then God removed his throne to heaven, and God judged this earth and made it covered with darkness and water in a useless wasteland that had no value and no use. Okay? Any thoughts, any questions on that?
When you say original earth,
verse 1.
This
earth? No, no. It's the same earth.
Okay.
It's the same earth.
Okay.
The condition has changed.
Right.
Okay. If he created this earth originally without any oceans, without any darkness, and he had his throne on that earth, and then he removed his throne and judged the Satan and the fallen angels and covered that world with darkness and chaos because of the judgment of God, then this earth became dark and covered with water. And that's what we have in verse 2. We have this earth in a judged state, covered with water, in total darkness, and absent from any life or any use of life. So that's what you have in verse 2 of Genesis. You have the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. That word moving means the Spirit of God was brooding over the surface of the waters. Now, what does a hen do when she's sitting on her eggs?
We throw them off.
Huh? We throw them off. She's brooding to bring forth life. So the Spirit of God is hovering or brooding over the surface of the deep with the intent to bring something out of that of life. So now we have an earth that is useless, that God is going to change into an earth that is for man. And so now you have day one, and time begins. Now before day one, even though God had created, the angels are not subject to time. So the first earth was not subject to time. There was no solar system. There was no reference of time. There was nothing there, but God had made an earth. So prior to that, you had nothing, and now you have, in the midst of eternity, you have an earth that's perfect with angels that are not subject to time. And then God judged that earth, and now it's darkened and covered with water, and in total darkness, it's chaotic, it's useless, and now the Spirit of God is going to begin a six-day reformation of the earth for man. Now, we talked about it. The Bible is a record of God's dealing with man. And the centerpiece of the Bible is the man, Jesus Christ, God who became man. So everything about the Bible is focused on what God is doing with man. God didn't write the Bible to tell us about angels. That's not the focus. The focus of the Bible is man. So we have bits and pieces of information about angels because angels have an impact on us. But he didn't write the Bible about angels. The angels are not redeemable. He didn't come to redeem angels. He came to redeem man. So in looking at the Bible, the reason he doesn't go into great detail about the creation of the angels, the fall of the angels and all that, is because it's not about them. It's about us. And the information we have about them is enough so that we can understand they have an impact on us and they're out there, but it's not about them. It's about us. It's about Jesus Christ, who became one of us. Okay? So now we have, in verse 3, it says, then God said, then, which means there's a change. The earth is wasteland, it's covered with water, it's total darkness. And then in verse 1 and verse 3, it says, then God said. So now you have an earth that is going to be fashioned and formed for the habitation of man. So everything in the six-day creation is what we call in Colossians 1, those things that were visible. You know, in Colossians 1, it says he made both the things that are visible and the invisible. The spirit realm is invisible. The angels are invisible. But now he's creating the things that are visible. So everything in the 6 days is a visible creation of an earth that is habitable and a place, a blessing for man. All right? Any questions so far? So day one, he creates the light. Now here you have what he brings out of total darkness, a partial light. All right? You have evening and morning the first day. Evening and morning refer to a literal day. Now, this other word that I have over here is the word for day. It's a Hebrew word, yom. I don't know how you pronounce it, but yom sounds good. That's the word for day, okay? Now, the word day does not mean 24 hours in itself. It just means when. It could mean any time frame. It means when. In fact, if you want to see how vast that word could be, in Isaiah 43, it's talking about God, and it says in verse 11, I am the Lord. There is no one, there's no Savior beside me. It is I who declared and saved and proclaimed, and there's no strange God among you. So you are my witnesses, declares the Lord. I am God from Yom. No, Yom is day. Even from eternity. That's the way it's translated in the Bible because God is eternal. But the word is the same word as day. So even from eternity, that means even when. God is when. He is always when. He's always day. But this word is the same word that's used in Genesis when it says there was one day. This is the same Hebrew word. So the word itself is not limited to 24-hour day. The context limits it. So whenever the word day is used, the word yom is used, it has to be interpreted in the context that it's given. Does that make sense? Because it can mean any period of time. When we talk about what I'm going to start putting together here soon, hopefully, the book on the day of the Lord, that's not 24-hour day. When we're talking about the day of the Lord, it is a framework of time that involves the second advent of Christ. So it's not limited to one day. So that word, day, is a word that encompasses a whole realm of meaning of time periods. So in Genesis 1:1, it says, God separated the light from darkness. He called the light day, and the darkness he called night. There was evening and there was morning. One day. One moment of time reference that's bound by evening and morning. So if you have evening and morning, what time frame are we talking about? 24 hours. The 24 hours was established evening and morning. And so when God created light, he created the light of God. Just like in the eternal earth, there will be no sun, but there will be eternal light. Here he created light that was to rotate around the earth because the earth is not moving because there's nothing else but the earth. There's nothing else. There are no other planets. There's no other sun. Nothing is moving. The earth is there. So the light seems to be rotating around the earth in day one to make evening and morning. Partial light and partial nighttime. Day two, he separates the waters from the water. So the earth is covered in water, so he removes some of that water and he places above the atmosphere and makes a greenhouse effect of the earth. And he creates this water layer above the atmosphere and the water layer on top on the earth. And he separates them and he creates the atmospheric heavens in preparation for the need of oxygen for man. And day three, he then separates the dry land from the water on the earth. So the earth is there, and now he's beginning to fashion the earth into a usable place for man to exist. And so he separates the waters from the dry land. The dry land appeared, and then he planted or created the plants on that earth. In day three. All this is on day three. He separates the land from the water, and the land becomes visible, and then he plants vegetation on the land. And again, when God is creating in 6 days this world and this earth for man, he creates it entirely intact, mature, fully ready to go. In other words, the plants that he made were fully mature plants. So from day three on, you had fully grown oak trees that are capable to produce acorns right off the bat. The question is, do they have growth rings? I don't know. Did that first oak tree have growth rings? Probably. Because God made it just like the rest of the oak trees that were fully mature without having to grow. Okay? So he created the chicken before the egg. But that's on day five. Okay? Question?
What was your reference in Isaiah?
Which one?
The last one you just did.
The one about eternity?
Yes.
43:13. I believe it is. Yeah. Okay, so day four is important because he created the plants on day three. And what did he create on day four? The sun, the moon, the stars, What do plants have to grow? They have to have the sun. Plants cannot live without the sun. So if he planted the plants on day three, you couldn't have millions of years between day one, day two, and day three, and the plants survive without the sun for millions of years. It's impossible. It's not going to happen. And again, each day is morning and evening the next day. So on day four, he creates the solar system. So here's the second heavens, where he creates all the stars. Now, the stars that are outside our solar system are not bound by our framework of time. What's the framework of our concept of time? Days, months, and years. The day is the rotation of the earth that gives light part of the day from the sun, and part of the day it's not light, it's darkness. So evening and morning. The month is the moon's revolving or moving around and creating the 30 days or the month period of the moon. So you have the establishment of the day that is controlled by the earth's rotation, the establishment of the month that is established by the movement of the moon, and then you have the establishment of the year that is our earth rotating or revolving around the sun. It takes a year for our earth to go all the way around in a circle of the sun. Now, anything outside of our solar system is not bound by the time that's on Earth, other than the light that comes from the other sources of light are for the Earth. And that's what he says. In verse 14, he says, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens, and separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons, for days and for years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He made them stars also, and God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth. Everything created in the expanse of the heavens was for the benefit of the earth. That means there's no other worlds out there that they're created for that benefit. They're created all for the benefit of the earth. Everything was made for man. And earth was made for man, and this earth was made for man, and everything out there is made for man. And God became one of man on earth, not man somewhere else in another part of the universe. God became man on earth. There's no other creations and there's no other worlds out there. People that hold to those creations and they're looking for aliens and all that, they're going to be influenced by the deception of Satan to think that there's something else out there that God did not create. Everything is for the earth. The earth may not be the center of the universe as we explain the universe, but it's the center of God's creation. And everything was created for the benefit of earth. There's no question about that. It makes it very clear. Everything was created for earth. And earth was created for man. So in the six-day creation, we have the earth, Kathy, we have the earth created in this 6 days. Everything in it was for man. Okay? So in day five, you have the birds and the fish. And in day six, you have the animals. And then you have Adam and Eve. Man, everything was created. Okay. Any questions about, again, the focus of the book of John is not on the creation. It's on the Creator. And we want to get back to the focus. But in looking at that, we wanted to make sure that you have a clear understanding of the creation. Now again, back to what I said originally. Verse 1 cannot be an overview of the entire 6 days. It can either be the first day or something prior to the first day. Either the earth was created in a chaotic, darkened state, or it became that under the judgment of God. The angels had to be created somewhere because they were created prior to the foundation of the 6 day earth, because Job makes it clear that the angels were witnesses to the six-day formation of the earth. So I hold that the earth was created perfect, the angels were created, the angels fell, God judged the earth, and then God brought out of that judgment a world created for man. Another thing that makes sense about that is if Satan, as the anointed cherub, had dominion over the earth, and God created Adam and Eve, what did he tell Adam and Eve? You have dominion. So he created Adam and Eve and gave them dominion over the earth. And what did Satan immediately do? And we know immediately because God had given them the command to multiply on the earth. before Adam and Eve could go obey the command of God to conceive and bring forth life from themselves, Satan appeared, deceived them, and they sinned. So prior to anything being further from Adam in his role as having dominion and to fill the earth with people, Satan intervened to try to destroy Adam and to take back dominion. And we know he took back dominion because in Luke chapter 4, when he's talking about when he came to tempt Jesus, he said, I'll give you all the kingdoms of this world because they were given to me. So Adam had dominion. He gave it up when he succumbed to Satan's temptation. And when we get into the millennial kingdom, and we get into the tribulation time, and we get into the lion of the tribe of Judah, what is the whole point of that in Revelation chapter 5? To take back dominion of the earth. So when you have in chapter 5 of Revelation, it's you got this picture of a book in verse 2, and there was a book, and it has seven seals. And no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open the book or to look upon it. And I began to weep greatly. This is John. Because no one was found worthy to open the book and to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, stop weeping. Behold, the lion that is from the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has overcome so as to open the book and its seven seals. So the book is the title deed to have dominion of the earth. The right to rule the earth. The seals are the events that are keeping that from happening. So the seals are the events of the book of Revelation, the activities of the tribulation period that will allow the things to transpire to bring the Son of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords from heaven back to earth to put an end to this rule of the Antichrist and to set up the kingdom. So the seven seals are the things that are keeping the kingdom from coming, but they're also the events that lead into the kingdom or the birth of the kingdom. And so then he says, worthy art thou to take the book and to break its seals in verse 9, and thou wast slain and did purchase for God from with thy blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and thou hast made them to be a kingdom and priest to our God, and they will reign upon the earth. So Christ is coming back to reign upon the earth. We're coming back with him to reign upon the earth, and he's coming back to take dominion. And the first thing he does when he comes back is he binds Satan and he puts him in the pit so that Satan can have no place of authority or deception on the earth during the messianic reign of Christ when he is demonstrating the rule and the dominion that Adam was supposed to have, but the second Adam will have as the Son of God. He goes on down there and he says, in verse 13, and every created thing which was in heaven and on the earth and under the earth and on the sea and all things in them, I heard him saying, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessings and honor and glory and dominion forever. So Christ is coming back to take back the dominion that he lost. All right, does that give you a picture of the purpose of God in establishing the creation and then the events that transpire to get us to where we are today? Everybody clear?
You know, when I was first becoming aware of God and everything, I was introduced to this concept that there was an earth before this earth. And I bet there isn't a college or hardly any church that has this as a concept, that there was an earth before.
Same earth.
Yeah, same earth.
Same earth. Now, yeah.
I wonder if colleges or whatnot used to teach this, or, you know, it just astounds me that nobody had ever, yeah, I mean, people, I don't know, it just seems interesting.
I can't answer that. So much of what we do and what we teach in the church is based on the traditions that have been given to us. And the traditions are primarily tied up with, majority of the traditions are tied up with the Catholic Church. And so just because they didn't get it right on everything doesn't mean that we should hold on to what they necessarily taught. Even when the Reformers came out of the Catholic Church, they reformed the teaching on the subject of salvation and the grace of God and the righteousness of God, justification by faith alone, in Christ alone, by grace alone. They changed that part of the doctrines of the Catholic Church, but they brought a lot of the traditions of the Catholic Church with them. So that's that. We have to deal with that. So all I can do is go back to the Word and say, as we study the Word and we compare Scripture with Scripture, and we are trying to make sure that we don't change what the apostles laid down, which I don't see any way we get it. Because if you go to Colossians, what does it say? It says in Colossians chapter 1, when we're talking about Christ, he says, "For he delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins, and he is the image of the invisible God and the firstborn of all creation." So in Jesus Christ, we have this work of the Spirit of God bringing out of darkness new life. So every one of us was in darkness. We were in the domain of darkness. And again, that word darkness always has an analogy to the results, the consequences of sin, the evil of sin, all aspects of things that are contrary to God's righteousness is included in the term darkness. It's always a connotation of judgment or sin or consequences of sin or evil. This world is, we're born in trespassing sins, we're in a domain of darkness, and he brings us out of that. And so the next verse is when we get into next week. It says, "In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not comprehend it." Again, darkness is opposite of God's light. In him is no darkness at all. God is light. In him is no darkness at all. It's referring to the aspect of every aspect of truth and righteousness and visibility. We're darkened, we're blinded, we can't see. And the Spirit of God has to open up our eyes. And that's what the light is. The light is to open up our eyes so that we see him for who he is, because we've been born of him by the Spirit of God, who in the process of opening our eyes has given us life. And we'll talk about that next week when we get into that. So I'm just making the idea that once we get through this ages of time, we get through the end of the ages of time. The last part of the ages of time is the 1,000 years of the reign of Christ on earth. At the end of the 1,000 years, Satan is loose for a brief season to identify those who are still not born again during the kingdom age. And they will all revolt against the king, and God will send fire down out of heaven to destroy them. And then God will take Satan and cast him into the lake of fire. And then this heaven and this earth will go away. Completely dissolve. You talk about a nuclear holocaust. When God frees, and that's what that verse in 2 Peter talks about, when God frees the elements, that means they all are released and they're all burned up. It says here, "Looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God," which is the eternal day, in chapter 3 of 2 Peter, verse 12, "on account of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning and the elements will melt with intense heat." The elements will, you're talking about splitting atoms? The elements are all going to be loosed from the things that keep them intact, and it's going to be all melted.
And that follows with secular scientists' revelations that they have determined that they know that everything in the universe is being held together by a force. They won't put a name on it, but even Hawking, before he died, expressed the idea that through their understanding, there is going to be an end to the universe, and it will happen through a heat source and the loosening of the force disappearing.
Yes. So when the elements split and the elements melt with fervent heat, that does away with the heavens and the earth were created in day one. I mean, in Genesis 1:1. That has gone through a process, and we're still part of that process today. And it's going to go through another renovation at the end of the tribulation when the earth is going to be completely debilitated from habitation. And then God's going to regenerate the earth for the Messianic kingdom. And there are going to be great changes for the Messianic kingdom. When the animal world is in perfect harmony with each other, there's no more lions eating sheep or anything. All the animals will go back to vegetation eating like they did at the beginning. And so during the millennial kingdom, it'll be like that. Now, there'll still be daytime and nighttime. We're still in this earth in the millennial kingdom. It's just going to be renovated for the kingdom age. But then after the millennial kingdom, this heaven and this earth are going to be completely destroyed. And then John says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And that will be the eternal order. And what happens immediately after the new heavens and new earth are created? Where's God's throne? It's in the heaven of heavens. Where does it come? Back to earth. Just like he did in the beginning, God's throne was put on earth to reign over the angels. And now his throne is coming back to the earth. The new Jerusalem is going to be on the new earth. Our eternal abode is not heaven. It is the new earth with God's presence on the new earth in the new Jerusalem. And that will be our eternal abode, the new Jerusalem. And we will be worshiping God on his throne in on the earth. And the reason there's no temple, because there's no need for an intermediary. There's no need for a priest to go between you and God. God is there. So there's no temple. It's God's throne. And we worship God personally, in person.
Okay. I think I'm agreeing with you all along the way. But I have a question. Are there other teachers, scholars, church historians that would hold to this position?
There are others that do hold to this position. It's just not in the plurality. Even in our church, but in
but
church
overall.
It's
not. Okay.
But.
I'm not saying that.
And that's fine. Right. And that's fine. And like I said at the beginning, I'm not saying that it has to be this way. I'm saying either Genesis 1:1 is the beginning of day one, or it's the beginning, it was prior to day one. And if it is the beginning, and I'm not saying that it couldn't have been day one, and you created the heavens and the earth, and then it started in that condition and God bring it out of it. But somewhere in that area, somewhere in that time frame, the angels had to be created. And they, from scriptures, it seems like they were there prior to the 6 days. And so you have to explain that. And I'm just saying, there has to be a place for that.
I'm not sure which one, but I looked it up. And there's one of the systematic theologies where the concept is definitely examined.
The reason most people have rejected this concept is because of evolution. And people are afraid to put a framework that there could have been something prior to the 6 days, because people will take that and run and say, well, that's when evolution took place. That's when all this other. But that's impossible. You had no ability for any fossil records of any time, because there was nothing created except angels. So if there's a framework of a prior creation and then out of that came the 6 days, it's not for the purpose of establishing billions of years, not for the purpose of establishing fossil records and carbon dating and all that that will allow evolution to have credibility. That's not it at all.
Okay, and then my second part of my question is, when you say that Earth was made for man, Colossians says that all things are to him, through him, and for him. So are you speaking of...
Okay, we're going to get into that. Okay. We're going to get into that aspect of the incarnation of the Word, or the incarnation of the Son, because it is in his role as the Son of God, as the Son of Man, as a relationship to humanity, that he is heir to all things. He created all things, but he becomes heir to all things as the one who came down and redeemed it. He becomes heir because he redeemed it. And so it is in his humanity that he is identified with us, and it is through his humanity that he died for us. And it is in his humanity that he becomes heir to all things, the preeminent one of all other humans. He's different from all other human beings in that he is a human, but he is God in the flesh, and he is the preeminent one of all, and all things, he is the heir to all as the God-man, not as the Word. So we get into that. We get into verse 14, when we talk about all the aspects of the Word becoming flesh.
So Spurgeon has the same idea as well.
I didn't know that.
His commentary says in Genesis 1:2, formless and empty, when God began to arrange this world in order, it was shrouded in darkness and had been reduced to what we call, for lack of a better name, chaos. This was just the condition of every soul of man when God begins to deal with him in his grace. It is formless and empty of all good things. Then he goes on further and says about 1:3 and 4, let there be light. God but had to speak the word, and the great wonder was accomplished. And then in his own words, he says, how there, well, those are all his own words, they were his commentary, but it, this is his writing. He says, how there was light before there was any sun, for the sun was not created until the fourth day of the week. It's not for us to say, but God is not dependent on his own creation. He can make light without the sun. He can spread the gospel without the aid of ministers. He can convert souls without any human or angelic method, for he does as he wills in the heavens above and on the earth beneath.
Yeah. And so again, what he's reading from is Spurgeon, and Spurgeon is giving commentary on the fact that just like the world was wasteland, chaos, and God brought out of that a perfect world, or a world that was designed for man, just like we are in chaos and darkness and sin, and God brings us out by the regenerative work of the Holy Spirit. So again, that's it. So next week, we will begin to look in verse 4 at the transition of the Word who was the creator, the originator of all things, to the Son who became the redeemer of humanity. And so we look at his aspect of becoming redeemer to man in the next lesson that we go to.